I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's Thursday in West London, presumably Thursday in the rest of the world as well, but it's overcast. We have a huge show for you today because we had the Coppa Italia final. Mm-hmm. We had the penultimate round of Premier League games. We had Poch winning a trophy, finally. Yes. Don't come up with that weird Trophée du Champion or whatever nonsense he won before. But let's start at what was, I think, effectively, may not turn out to be this way, Chelsea could still go out, but a playoff for the Champions League between Chelsea and Leicester City at Stamford Bridge. It was a replay of the game on Saturday in the FA Cup final. Tuchel made some, not all, of the same choices, including putting my man Reece James in the back three.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced, but yeah.
And Chelsea won it. And I think in the end it was 2-1, and you could say could have, you know, maybe Leicester could have snatched one at the end. But I thought Chelsea really, really dominated them.
They did. That was their gap. I thought they were really fantastic at times in the way they built up their movement, the way they built from the back, under pressure at times. I still felt that Leicester played for a draw, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that was not the idea, but he certainly felt like that in the team that Roger selected with Iheanacho on the bench, in the way they played, in the way they pressed. It looked to me very much like we'd be very happy with the draw. And that was, this is fair.
Well, Iheanacho went out, Maddison came in. So, like, I mean, we could have it. Maddison, I thought, was really poor. I don't think he's fully fit, maybe. No, he's only just coming back. Maybe.
But it was hard if you play for a draw to have against a team like this, against a team like Chelsea like this, to expect too much from Maddison, I think.
The upshot of all this is that we're set up for one of those end of the season kind of three-way runs, three-way dances. Chelsea are playing away to Aston Villa.
Yeah.
A win guarantees them a Champions League place. I don't think it's going to be easy at all. We'll get on into this. Leicester and Liverpool beating Burnley 3-0. Mm. Essentially, if they both win, they're going to finish level on points. It's going to be decided by goal difference. And Liverpool now have an edge of 4 goals in the goal difference. So, yeah.
So Liverpool against Crystal Palace.
That's right. Liverpool against Crystal Palace. And Roy Hodgson, his final game when he loved to put one over on Liverpool.
And Leicester against Spurs, who still have to play for Europa League places.
Yeah. So clearly, I would say Leicester greatly advantaged, given that it's Spurs. Now, just kidding, Spurs fans.
Just kidding.
We kid because
but the tough,
we love.
Yeah, toughest game for Leicester of the, you know, really, I think Leicester, right. Then Chelsea, then Liverpool.
I just want to go back to the game. I want to talk about Timo Werner because, like, I saw him talk afterwards, and he sounds all goofy because he's got that weird high-pitched voice as well. In fact, honestly, it looked like almost like a sideshow because you went from sort of Tuchel insect-like afterwards to this guy coming on. And I almost felt a little sorry for him. And then I remembered his wages and his reputation. Because he did so many things right in his movement and whatever. The goal that gets disallowed, he goes to head it and he's so completely uncoordinated. If he just hits the ball cleanly, the ball doesn't come off his head onto his arm. The other time when he ran, he runs offside completely unnecessarily so many times.
But on the
not
first
just
goal
the disallowed goal, yeah.
But there's no way he should be offside on that move.
I mean, it's almost like he doesn't realize how fast he is.
But this one is not about pace even, because it's a small movement just on the edge of the box. He just has to be aware and realize where the last defender is, where he is, at what point the ball is going to come to him, because it was so obvious that the ball was going to come to him. Just be careful. Just be clever.
I thought that was a big call to make, because I thought on Tuchel's part, because once you find, I assume Havertz would have started if he'd been fit, right? Instead, he pulled a muscle. Once you do that, to me, it was like, all right, keep Werner on the bench, chuck him on the last 20 minutes, and start Giroud. Giroud's been there. You know, you're playing a back three, which obviously Soyuncu and Fofana are good in the air. Castagne maybe less so. You can find mismatches there. You know Giroud's going to put in a shift. Wear him down with Giroud, then chuck on the Werner. He didn't do that, and he was vindicated. Werner and Pulisic instead. I thought their quickness,
the movement,
really made a bigger difference, and maybe the combination of that and Leicester perhaps sitting too deep.
Yeah, I think the movement was great. Look at the Ben Chilwell chance and 0-0 early on, when Werner drops to the centre circle,
creates the hole for him.
Yeah, and then you know make that little dummy to go between the two Leicester defenders, and then that and same with the penalties. So all that movement, I think, was great. I think everything that Tuchel did in terms of tactics, ideas, worked perfectly.
obviously Chelsea aren't there yet, and I don't think you want to take anything for granted against Villa because Jack Grealish is back.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they've been on a decent run of results. I think inevitably they will be, it's somewhere in the back of their mind, they'll be thinking about the much bigger game a week later. We think they'll qualify, but they have to win this game. A draw will not be sufficient.
It might not be.
Definitely won't be. If Leicester and Liverpool both win.
Yeah, but they might not win either. So, yeah, you don't know. It's going to be interesting because you're right. They have to go and win. Villa will have fans. It's the last game of the season. Villa can still qualify for the Europa League as well. They're still in for something, or the Conference Europa League, whatever it's called.
Conference League.
So there's something there. So I think it's going to be a great game. I thought a few things. I thought Tuchel was a bit tense on Tuesday night, really.
Just a little bit.
And maybe he played a bit with the fans and the cameras that were there, but every time they were missing something, he was even more demonstrative than usual. And rightly so, because after the two defeats against Arsenal, you know, he hadn't lost three games in a row since in Thames and Mines. So it would been a long time since he lost three
Dortmund.
In a row. Yeah, even at Dortmund. Never three in a row. So I think he could feel the pressure. And certainly that first half where they had all those chances, all those opportunities.
I think also what did it was, I want to go back to Werner on this, and just kind of like the fact that I kind of felt a sort of sad connection with him. The penalty that he didn't get.
I mean, I don't know how.
I don't want to go back and keep picking on Mike Dean. But
what do you think could be? Why did they not give it? What's the explanation?
I have no idea. The old thing would have been, you know, back in the day, and I've heard some pundits say this, like, well, you know, Tielemans has no idea that he's there,
yeah.
So it's not intentional. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but it doesn't need to be intentional to be a foul. Mm. You know.
And you know what?
I'm just going to provide a quick description of this so people can understand, people who haven't seen it. Basically, Tielemans is clearing the ball. It's a loose ball in the area. And Werner nips in front of Tielemans as Tielemans' leg is back. Tielemans goes to strike the ball and finds Werner's leg. Yeah. Werner did it because he was quicker.
Yeah.
Right?
Everywhere else on the pitch is a foul. And by the way, if you look at Tielemans' face when Mike Dean blew the whistle to give Leicester a foul, Tielemans knows it. Tielemans thinks it's a pen. He knows it. And you can see on his face, he goes, ah. Oh. And then he looks at Mike Dean, and Mike Dean gives the ball. It's even a free kick for Leicester. And he's like, what? And I think...
And we have a VAR.
But you know what's interesting is that if Luke Thomas, who is a Leicester fan, great young player, promising player, and it's not his fault if they lost that game or anything, but him not sorting out his feet at the start of the second half, considering that very, very stupid corner that leads to the Rudiger goal. If he clears that ball, the whole second half might be completely different for Liverpool and for Leicester and for Chelsea. And yet it's a mistake like this, a bit like a mistake that Jorginho made against Arsenal, that end up being the difference very much in that game in terms of who scores first.
It got pretty nasty at the final whistle in like a WWE style thing. Yeah. The issue with I'd missed this the first time around, but apparently in the post-match celebrations, there's video of Daniel Amarte.
Yeah.
He's got the official Chelsea FA Cup pennant, and he has it in the air, and then he kind of drops it behind him.
He threw it on the floor, yeah.
And I think, was it Thiago Silva's misses?
Well, Thiago Silva, but you knew that was the beef there.
At the end?
Yeah. You knew there was something like that.
So I'm going to show my bias, right? Antonio Rudiger is one of my favorite Germans in history, along with Albert Einstein. And I think that's it.
And Thomas Tuchel.
Not on a par with... But anyway, but what I don't get is... I'm assuming they use this as some kind of motivation. It's weird to me that people like Rudiger and Thiago Silva, who, you know, been there, done that, many, many years in the game... Would they really get so wound up over this that they does it actually work for you as like, ooh, they've disrespected, if I'm Thiago Silva, right? They're disrespecting the badge, the pennant of this. There's this backup, you know, Jobsworth fullback has disrespected the pennant of the club. It's kind of heartwarming in one way. I'm like, is it real?
It's just a case of once there was that little sort of battle or, you know, brawl or whatever, then Amati is there getting involved. And I think if you're Thiago Silva and Rodrigo, say, hey, by the way, we've seen what you did. We haven't forgotten about you. And maybe it was not extra motivation. I don't think they needed extra motivation.
No,
but it was certainly a case of like, hey, you know, we're here and we didn't like what you did. I would not mess with Rudiger. I mean, Rudiger, I find Rudiger fascinating quickly because this is a season where for half of it, he was in the cupboard. Where Frank Lampard didn't care about him.
Not just the cupboard, but the cupboard under the stairs. Yeah. The one with the spiders and the cobwebs.
The one where Harry Potter sleeps, you know, when his uncle put him in there. And then Thomas Tuchel arrives, who he tried to sign for PSG in the summer. And then he suddenly becomes this super leader, which I guess he's always been. But maybe Lampard didn't recognize the need of or something.
And on top of that, he's wearing that cool black mask, which makes him look even more like an Avenger.
Yeah, of course.
I'm wondering if does he still need to wear it for medical reasons? Should he just?
Yeah.
Okay, I think what would be really cool. I know you're a regular watcher, Antonio. Just keep wearing it. Afterwards.
David's kept the glasses even when he probably didn't need them.
His superhero glasses. Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
It would be kind of cool.
And the back three. The back three works for much better for Rudiger than the back four, and same for Thiago Silva. So.
But not for Reece James. You still don't like that.
I love Reece James, as you know. He can play anywhere for me. I prefer him on the right than as a centre back.
All right. You know my thoughts on predictions. I think they're silly. I think it's pretty evident. Villa have something to play for. Mm. Spurs have something to play for. Mm. Palace do not. Equally, Palace have a bunch of individuals who on their day, if you free them up, I mean, obviously it's not going to be as it. Unfortunately, he's injured, which is a shame. But, you know, we've seen Andrews Townsend leather the ball when he shoots from 40 yards out. You know, Zaha can dribble everybody. This is all still very much in play.
Mm.
One interesting dynamic is, as we said, if it comes down to goal difference, I mean, obviously it's hard to see, assuming Leicester and Liverpool both win, for Leicester to qualify, Leicester would need to probably win by 6 goals, for example.
Four or five, depending on it, right?
I mean, that's not going to happen, is it?
No. For me, the top four, we stay the same. And then my next question to you is the debate that we had a little bit a few weeks ago when you said that you thought it was more important for Leicester to qualify for the Champions League than winning this FA Cup. And the debate since Saturday and then Tuesday, I saw people like Gary Lineker, for example, saying that for him, he thought the FA Cup was more important. I saw people saying everybody will remember that year where Leicester win the FA Cup and not the fact that they finished top four. Well, I disagree, because if next season you're in the Champions League and you knock out Real Madrid in the last 16 with the second leg at the King Power, where the atmosphere is amazing, and it's one of those games, one of the greatest games in Leicester history, you will remember that day forever. The day you beat Real Madrid and Zinedine Zidane and Karim Benzema or whatever, or Barcelona or Bayern Munich or PSG, whoever. So what is most important for them? Is it the money that Champions League and the standing that Champions League bring you and all those games that you will have? Or is it to win your first FA Cup ever and have that day, that special day too?
I think the drama and the way they want it with the Tielemans goal and the saves at the end and, you know, VAR ruling off Chilwell's goal, I think that adds a whole layer of memory to the day.
Mm.
But if you talk about it from the importance of team building, you know, potentially there's between their Champions League revenue and their Europa League revenue could be anywhere from 80 to 100 million. And the difference is that at Leicester, you know, the owners aren't going to pay themselves that money in dividends. They will continue investing in the club.
Hmm.
So having that means being able to retain your stars for longer, adding to it, you know, maybe making a run, maybe even becoming, I mean, it feels weird saying Leicester could be a fixture in the top four with that additional money, but it's not crazy, right? It's not inconceivable when you look at how far back Spurs and Arsenal are and how difficult it is going to be for them to rebuild. If you stay ahead of them as Leicester, if you can add to it, then all you have to do is finish ahead of, you know, one of United, Liverpool, Chelsea, or City, and it's not inconceivable. They've done it before, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So that, to me, is what is why I think that's more important.
Yeah. By the way, they're finalizing a deal for Boubacar Soumaré from Lille, the young French midfielder, which I think, again, is a great move. It's 25 million euros all in all with bonuses and etc. He's 22. I think he's a fantastic talent. And again, I think we have to applaud Leicester's recruitment. They the scouting network, all of that, because for me, this is another very, very good signing.
Yeah, I think it's recruitment and execution. It's not like they're signing unknown players.
No, you're right.
You spoke very well of how they got Wesley Fofana. Everybody knew who he was. Yeah. It's not like, oh, we've unearthed a gem here.
No,
it's just
they
were quick, they were direct, they sold the club well. So well done there. Final point just for me about having the fans back in the stands. I know it's not full or whatever.
It was so good.
I've realized how much I absolutely hate the can noise. Because I watch these games mostly either obviously on British TV or on Italian TV via the satellite. And in Italy, they don't play the piped in noise.
No,
people
never.
Just don't
Same
like it.
Front.
And I was kind of used to it, and I liked it. You know, at first it felt weird, like I missed it, and it was depressing. But then you get used to it, and I like it so much more than the stupid piped in noise, which sometimes goes at the wrong time. Sometimes you're looking at the screen and you hear all the noise and you can look at the stands and you see there's nobody there and you're like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, so having real bodies and in some grounds, they even made it look like the ground was full.
Yeah.
You know, despite the social distancing.
However,
fantastic.
However,
yes.
And just we finish on this story. James Maddison was subbed off in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was subbed off when he was the other side of the pitch to where the Leicester bench was. So he had to walk all around Stamford Bridge.
And according to the rules, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously Chelsea fan, as you can imagine, because this is what fans do, gave him a good stick, like, you know, you're the Mason Mount and that kind of stuff. And then I wondered, in that long
you're
walk...
You're the off-brand Mason Mount.
That long walk that James Maddison had to walk, if he thought, oh, I just wish, just for today, that there was no one in here. No gesture with the hands, no insult, nothing, and...
It's part of it. A lot of pent-up here. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing. However you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Chelsea, because Juventus have won the Coppa Italia. Jules, they're playing Atalanta in the final. Atalanta were favorites in this game for good reason, because Juve's future in the Champions League hanging with the balance. And Juventus put in the kind of performance where, as one pundit put it, they played like Atalanta, in the sense they played with intensity, they played with precision, they played with speed of thought, speed of execution. They played really, really well. They did all those, they pressed high, all those things that were written in Pirlo's thesis that said, this is what they're going to do this year, but he wasn't able to get his players to do. And, okay, look at me, I'm smiling, I'm excited after Juve victory. Who would have ever thought that? But my question is, why? Why this game?
Why not before?
Why not before?
Yeah, I don't know, Gab. I think we've seen it at times, rarely, but in certain patches. This time it felt like they managed to do it for longer periods of the game, I think, especially in the second half where they were so good. There was a time where I thought, okay, it's 1-1, Atalanta are going to score a second one. They're so, that intensity, they're so fit, they run so much, they're relentless to the point that I think they tie you out, and then they end up scoring. And then when you can bring on Luis Muriel or Ilicic, and they've got so much power to bring on halfway through the game, that I thought, okay, and yet Juve were probably the better team in the second half, which I didn't expect to
see.
They
were by far the better team I thought in the
second
half.
And I was like, wow. So it's good. It was Pirlo's birthday on that day. He turned 42. Maybe he said to the boys, hey, it's my birthday today. Come on, please. Just do what I asked you for once. I don't know. It was good to see.
A really entertaining game, too.
Yeah. I don't know if that would save him, and if he can say, look, you know, we can play like this more. We can do this, especially if things go well for him at the weekend and they finish top four. But there was a lot of good signs, I thought.
I made this point about Pirlo's future, which was, you know, the narrative in Italy everywhere is like, okay, you won the Coppa Italia, so this means that if you finish top four, then you stay. And if you don't, then you're out. Mm. And I think this is so stupid. This is such the wrong way to look at it. I hate it when clubs do this. Because the reality is, if Milan screwed the pooch against Atalanta and Juve win 1-0 because, you know, Ronaldo penalty,
yeah.
Juve will go to the Champions League. Like, both, like, Juve can play really, really well and be knocked out.
Yeah.
Or they can play really badly and advance.
True.
Whether or not you keep Pirlo, given that he's cheap, you know, he doesn't make a lot of money, given that he's the direction you want to go in, should depend solely on one thing, on whether you think his ideas are percolating through and whether you think he's the right guy to take you where you want to be.
Yeah.
That's all it should depend on. It shouldn't depend on whether you qualify or not.
I agree
we
with
need
you.
To get out of this. I know results are important and whatever, but I have to laugh. And I see it in the Premier League too. Like, you know, Arsenal, I think, there was one point where, like, they could have finished, I think maybe still, they can finish 10th or they can finish 6th. Well, it makes a big difference to Arteta if they finish 6th. It doesn't. Yeah, maybe one, you get the Europa League. Maybe, but you can't bring up, especially with all these dead rubbers at the end of the season, that's not how we should be judging managers, and it's not how we should be judging Pirlo.
No, you're right. And but I was saying that in the sense of, okay, if you Pavel Nedved or, you know, Agnelli Paratici, whoever, and you watch that game and that performance, you think, okay, there's something in there that maybe we hadn't seen before.
Was it just Kulusevski?
Didn't I tell you that defeat against Milan that he should start all those games? I think Kulusevski was fantastic. I think Chiesa, as we know, and you and I were a bit reluctant when he signed. 14 goals, 10 assists. He was clutch in that final. He was clutch against, you know, in the derby against Torino. He was clutch against Lazio. Yeah. He was clutch against Milan. He came up big when they needed him the most. Even against Porto in the Champions League, he was the only one, really. And I think this is fantastic if you can have Kulusevski and Chiesa in that kind of form for all season or most of the season is very promising.
A word on Gasperini. We've praised him and Atalanta to high heaven, rightly so. There's a reason I don't particularly like him too much as a guy.
Yeah, I know.
After the game, on and on and on about the refereeing decisions.
Yeah.
The first one, there was that foul by Cuadrado in the build-up to Kulusevski's goal.
Yeah.
Should the VAR have gone all the way back?
I have to say, I thought so when I watched the game. Do you disagree?
I think he could have, but I was just like, for once.
Yeah,
like,
I'm not saying true.
And I realized, you know, Gasperini, weirdly, you know the last trophy he won? It was when he was coaching Juventus's youth team. And
really?
They won a summer tournament. It doesn't change the fact that he's not an outstanding manager, but just for once, just say, leave it. Just say, we would have went on to win it. Look, Champions League, that is our trophy. All right, Jules, let's just remind ourselves where we are with Serie A, with the race to finish top four. Inter and Atalanta mathematically qualified.
Yep.
Juventus are fifth. They're 1 point behind Napoli and Milan. So that means their fate is not in their hands. Napoli play Verona, mid-table, nothing to play for. If Napoli win, they're definitely through. If Napoli Napoli equal or better Juventus' results, they're there.
Exactly.
Milan, essentially the same thing. They have to beat or equal Juventus's result. Now they're playing Atalanta.
Yeah.
Let me just go through some of the fun conspiracies that we have that are already bouncing around Italy. One is that obviously Gasperini started his career as a Juve youth coach.
Yeah.
Ooh, could this mean that they'd be extra motivated? I personally don't think motivation matters with Atalanta. I think they generally play the same way throughout.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
And the other element, though, which is true, is that if Atalanta lose, the way the Champions League money gets divvied up is partly based on historical results and historical ranking.
Hmm.
So I've seen different calculations, but basically, if Atalanta can knock Juventus out by losing to Milan, then they will get some I think it's 6 to 8 million more
than
if you were in the Champions League, which is a weird disincentive game that they're playing there. I don't buy any of this. You know, I think Milan are going to do it because it's all been building up to this, and it would be madness if they didn't. Juventus are playing Bologna. I want to get a sense of you about the pulse of Juve and kind of where they are, what awaits them going forward. Because we said before, they've lost a ton of money. They're obviously still facing this UEFA disciplinary investigation over the Super League. I don't think that's going anywhere, but, you know, it still turns the screws a little bit. Andrea Agnelli, I think, has to be reapproved. That they're going to have the shareholders meeting where they have to confirm him or not. I assume he will be confirmed unless something comes out, or he decides to walk away or whatever, which I don't think he will. But let's start with the players who are there and who might leave. Obviously, Cristiano is the one everybody talks about. I had to laugh because pictures were shown of a moving van outside his house, like one of those big trucks.
Yeah.
And so people taking that as, ooh, is he moving his stuff out early?
It's either he bought a new sofa and it was delivered, or they're taking it from himself. There were stories as well that a big truck came up to take his cars away. You know, he's got loads of very, very nice cars. And he came during in the middle of the night so no one would see it, and all the cars went in. So again, he could just take them away for the holidays because he liked having his Bugatti and his Lamborghini with him wherever he goes on holidays. I don't know. But I think it would be a long saga again, a long summer. You know, Jorge Mendes has said that he was not going anywhere, certainly not to Sporting. Well, you and I love the idea of him going back.
I think his family loves it. Would love the idea.
See how much they celebrated that title? Yeah. Incredible. I don't know. If Zinedine Zidane comes and replaces Andrea Pirlo on the bench at Juventus, does that make Cristiano more likely to stay, and him and Zidane being reunited, and we know how much they love each other? Maybe. If they don't qualify for Champions League, can Cristiano really play Europa League football? I don't think so. So there's so many things that are still up in the air.
These are all the familiar elements. What I wanted to emphasize, though, is that the moving van doesn't mean anything, right? Cristiano owns enough homes and properties and clothes around the world. What is he getting, like, you know, the early mover discount by ordering them now before the end of the season? Plus, not to mention, I'm assuming he's probably going to take a couple of days off, and then he's going to meet up with the Portugal squad for the Euros,
course,
right?
Yeah.
So I just love this story.
Stories of moving vans,
people looking for homes. Cristiano owns a lot of homes around the world. Like, it doesn't mean anything, you know. But I was thinking, people are never going to be talking rebuild. Obviously, we know Buffon's going. They've been strongly linked to Donnarumma. We'll see how that goes. Personally, as much as I really like Donnarumma, I'm not sure. You know, it leaves you with a Chesney problem.
Yep.
Chesney's fine. Chesney's good. It's difficult to shift Chesney for the same reason that it's difficult to shift. It's difficult for Donnarumma to move to another club other than Juve, because not that many clubs are looking for goalkeepers. I'm not sure that's a move that I would do.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, you've got De Ligt. I'm trying to think of positives, bright spots for Juve that can get Juve fans excited. Personally, I know I'm in the minority here. I think it's time for Chiellini to move on. I don't need to see him play again. I know he's had some good games at the end, but just too much money for a guy who's going to get injured and is too old.
I agree.
The fact that Bonucci couldn't get on the pitch in the last couple games, that speaks to De Ligt's progress.
Yeah.
But also, Bonucci's being kept out of the side by an old Chiellini. That's not a good sign.
That's not a good sign at all. And certainly, since the move to Milan, that it looks to me that something is broken. I know he came back and Milan didn't work out for him for very different reasons, but something looks like he's broken. He's certainly not the same Bonucci that he was before he made that move, which was a bit of a crazy move, really, at the time. I understand that you want to be a leader and you want to be...
It was a breakdown in relationship with Allegri at the time.
Still, the fact that he just came back a year later shows you that he even realized himself what a mistake it was. So I think for me, Demiral and De Ligt could certainly be the future defensively for Juve, and I would be very happy if you start them and you've given them the confidence, and Demiral can sort out his little mistakes then and there, the lapse of concentration. I think Demiral is very talented. So why not starting next season and saying, like, you know what, let's trust them. They will make mistakes, especially Demiral, but he will learn from it and they will be very, very strong together.
Yeah, I don't think you need much surgery there, especially as Bonucci is going to stick around.
Yeah.
You've got your three starters, maybe bring in a kid. I think the fullback situation can probably always be improved, but again, some combination of Cuadrado, Danilo, Alexandro, I'm okay with that for another season. It's in midfield, they desperately need a playmaker, like a real playmaker. Mm. A guy who can pass and so on. Now they've got the kid Rovella coming from Genoa. Yeah. Looks good. It is a big step up. I think this is going to be another big theme, is if you have Pirlo there, who's really tried to push a lot of the youngsters, that might be more welcoming. If you get a veteran manager coming in, he might say, I can't deal with this 20-year-old kid. McKennie's obviously been a bright spot, tailed off a bit in the second part of the season.
Yeah, but for a first season in Italy, it's still very positive.
Chiesa and Kulusevski, obviously said. Huge. I think, to me, the big theme in the summer is going to be, though, up front, because you've got the Cristiano situation that we talked about where, you know, does he want to stay, does he want to go, how much you let him go for if he wants to go. I think that those are all valid questions.
Yep.
But then you have Dybala, who still hasn't extended his contract. You're going to lose him to free agency in a year's time. I don't see how you can extend Dybala, but equally I don't see how you can sell him, because who's going
to... If the price is low, Gab, you can. But don't expect to get 30 or 35 million for him, but be happy with 20 or 15.
That's crazy. This is a guy who was 80 million.
I know, but unfortunately, for different reasons, the pandemic, the everything, you could end up with just 15. Take it. Really take it. I don't think he's worth sticking with him for another season and then having to let him go on free.
If Cristiano stays, I wouldn't stick with him for another reason, for another factor too. I think you want to get more minutes and more space for Chiesa and Kulusevski.
Yeah.
And I'm not averse to the idea. I made the point with Aubameyang. Mm-hmm. You know, don't feel compelled to extend these people just because in the last year, if they're happy where they are and they're productive.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can't afford a season where you try to play Dybala back into fitness and so on, because you can't give him the minutes, because you need to give the minutes to Cristiano if he stays, Chiesa and Kulusevski. Yeah. Those are the guys who should be getting the minutes. Plus Morata, who obviously is on loan. They're going to have to find some money to keep him if they want to keep him. I'm assuming it makes sense to keep him.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think you can work out a deal with Atletico anyway, because obviously they're in a tough spot financially as well.
Yeah.
So, then
be clever. The Rovella signing is a clever one. It didn't cost you the earth. It's a clever one. You know, you could look at those. And I'm not talking free agency all the time, which did something that they used to love or still do, but be creative a bit in what you want to do, who you're trying to target. You know, and I think it's still Juve we're talking about. If they qualify for the Champions League, it's still a very attractive proposition for anyone.
I wonder, do Aaron Ramsey and Phil Neville get on? You know, in the same way that they tricked them into taking Blaise Matuidi, could you send Aaron Ramsey to Miami?
And Higuain.
Yeah, I know. You might want to tap that vein if you can. Look, I know. People are going to bring up TAM and GAM and all the other MLS rules about why it can't be done.
Yes.
But it feels like Aaron Ramsey has another 7 years left on that monster contract. I'm not having a go at him.
No, of course. But
if you're always injured and you can't get in the team and you don't fit the team, maybe it's time to find another team, right?
Yeah, completely. I'm with you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Juve. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Nearly 5.5 years after his last appearance for Le Bleu, Karim Benzema has been recalled to the French national team. Jules, remind us why this has taken so long.
It's an incredible story, Gab, when you think about it. He was dropped back in October 2015, because he was allegedly involved in the Mathieu Valbuena sex tape scandal, blackmailing him, and all of that. So Deschamps took his distance with Karim Benzema.
It was really his friend who was...
Yeah,
alleged, blackmailing him.
But Karim as well.
We don't have to say allegedly, because his friend really was blackmailing him, right?
Yeah, but okay. Karim, the trial that will happen in October for Benzema is where the Benzema gave an advice to Valbuena saying, pay off those guys and that video will never come out. Or if Benzema actually blackmailed Valbuena, almost threatening him by saying, you have to pay those guys,
right,
those guys who are his friends. Yeah, exactly. So we will see. But fascinating story, because after that it got really ugly between Deschamps and Benzema. Benzema saying that Deschamps bowed to the racist part of France for not picking him up for the Euros 2016. Then Deschamps' house, Olivier House, was tied with the word racist not long after that interview. So there was really bad blood between them, to the point that Karim didn't think that he would play again for France while Deschamps would be the national team head coach. And yet it all changed. They forgave each other. They apologized to each other. They met twice before Tuesday and the announcement of the squad for the Euros. And it's a fascinating story, not just because Benzema can win the Euros in July and go to jail in October if he was proven guilty of blackmailing Valbuena, but also because it's a story of forgiveness, redemption, and also that shows you that people deserve a second chance sometimes.
He can't really go to prison, can he?
Of course he can. 5 years, 75,000 fine.
Don't athletes always have their sentences, unless it's Duncan Ferguson, don't they always get their sentences suspended?
He's been charged.
For non-violent crime, really?
For what he's been charged, the risk is 5 years and 75,000 euros. I don't think he will go there, of course, but this is what he's risking. And it's a fascinating story from start to finish. It's not just Benzema returning, though, Gab. Thomas Müller and Mats Hummels are also back with Germany. Jogi Löw calling them back.
Yeah, I think this is kind of common sense. You don't want to be the Yogi Grinch who stole Christmas, you know. Like, I mean, I think in some ways Jogi Löw is insulating himself a little bit, because imagine Germany have another shocker like they did at the World Cup, and those two guys are home. People will forget that he won a World Cup and whatever. I mean, not forget, but, you know, it will tarnish.
Of course.
I think he's kind of come to terms with the fact that he's going to leave after the Euros. I wouldn't even be surprised if this was kind of part of the deal where he agreed to step aside after the Euros to bring these guys in. And good for them. I think between the two of them, I'll be really curious to see what he does with Müller, because he's used different formations. I don't know if there's a natural spot for Müller in the position he plays for Bayern with Germany. But I think Müller's just going to be happy to be there.
And of course.
Look, I think Müller's the kind of guy who makes any team better.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to France for a minute. Jules, I know you're loaded with talent in every position. But does it make sense to you that Dayot Upamecano and Theo Hernandez are staying home, but Kurt Zouma and Luka Dean are going?
Well, you don't like Kurt Zouma and Luka Dean?
Not as much as I like Dayot Upamecano.
Oh, I know. Okay, so Upamecano has a chance, and clearly he didn't take it because he was called up by Deschamps. He played, he's got three caps, and yet maybe he was not fully convincing. Deschamps likes, as you know, this idea of group, the notion of group, of unity together. Zouma has been there far more than Upamecano. Ding has been there more than Theo Hernandez, who's never been called up, who's really hoping that he could this time be with his brother, with the national team, which would be incredible.
I assume Theo's not there because Deschamps, as we saw in the World Cup, likes centre-backs masquerading at full-backs, witness Pavard and Lucas Hernandez, whereas Theo Hernandez is extremely attacking.
Yeah, maybe, but
I mean, Luka Dean is too, I guess. But
yeah,
still.
That's why. I just think that Dean, in Deschamps' mind, was in the hierarchy of left-back, was ahead, and Ferland Mendy, had not been injured, is probably still ahead of Theo as well. So it's harsh for Theo after the two seasons he's had at Milan, I get that, but his time will come, his time will come. Liverpool beat Burnley 3-0, and it's Roberto Firmino who breaks the ice. Gab, he doesn't score many, but when he does, they're pretty important.
Yeah, I think didn't he score the 90th minute winner against Spurs earlier this season? He had two against United. I'm glad. This thing where like he plays great and people like when Liverpool win, it's like, ooh, Firmino, he doesn't need to score. He does so many important things. When Liverpool play badly, he says, oh, but you need a 20 goal a season. So hey, look, it's fine. He scored the big goals when it matters. I'm happy for him. I think he's a very good player.
I agree.
Mauricio Pochettino wins his first trophy as Paris Saint-Germain beat Monaco 2-0, his first real trophy. Jules, thankfully, we don't need to mention this ever again. But how important is it that Paris Saint-Germain deliver this weekend, especially since, and I checked this, they were 1 point back when he was appointed, and they're still 1 point back now.
Yeah, it's a big game Sunday. They play against Brest, and Lille will go to Angers. And if Lille don't win and PSG win, they will be crowned champion, and they will make the domestic double, which Pochettino would love. Of course he would love. It happens sometimes. Carlo Ancelotti came in January 2012 when PSG were top of the table and he finished second behind Montpellier. For Poch, if he doesn't make it, if they still finish second, that doesn't mean it's a failure either, like he didn't mean for Carlo at the time. It's just that sometimes half a season when you just arrive, if you've got a bit of injuries, COVID in this case, it's not easy. And I don't think he should be judged just on that. But of course in Paris, everybody's hoping that Lille can choke and fall under the pressure and don't win that last game, and PSG did, and they're champions.
By the way, riddle me this, because Manif Icardi scored in that game against Monaco, and I watched the highlights with no commentary, because weirdly that's how the French FA do it. You've got Mbappe clear on goal in front one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and you see Icardi sprinting, which doesn't happen often, and he's shouting kiki, 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 and I like, and he passes it, and he just squares it to him from the score. People like Maurito, right?
Yeah, we like him.
And
we
Mbappe
like him
is generous. Yeah.
And Marc Maignan was coming out fast, so I think the best option definitely was to pass the ball to Icardi, and Mbappe scored the second
Mbappe
goal.
Like pudding,
it was Signé Mbappe. You know, all credit to him for that win. Tottenham Hotspurs lose to Aston Villa at home 2-1. Gab, was this the last time that we see Harry Kane playing for Spurs at the Tottenham Stadium?
That's the narrative now. I don't think it is. He wants to leave. I'll tell you, there's no question. That's been made it very clear that he wants to leave. We respect that decision. Equally, Spurs have made it very clear that he's not leaving. He has a contract for another 3 years. And obviously, everybody has his price. But people in the media are talking $120 million, $150 million for Harry Kane. Harry Kane turns 28 on July 28th. I know that because it's also my birthday.
Yeah.
The clubs that can afford that kind of money, whether it's Manchester City, Manchester United, some people have suggested Chelsea, I'm not sure, maybe Real Madrid, I don't know. Hmm. For that kind of money, chuck in a little bit more, and you bring home a Haaland or an Mbappe who still hasn't extended his contract. Now, I don't want to say Kane is better or worse than Haaland or Mbappe, but I can definitively say that they are respectively 6 and 8 years younger than he is. So it's a no-brainer. You know, in this COVID economy, it's a no-brainer. You do not spend that kind of money on Kane, because if you can afford to do that, you can afford to get
but
those other guys.
But maybe you look for a different profile. They're not the same strikers, either of them three. So you might want someone who's more the profile of Kane.
28 years old. You're
I know.
He's
5 older.
Years of Kane versus 10 years of the other two. Come on.
I'm with you 100%. I'm just saying the profiles are different.
I just say this to point out, he's got very little leverage here. But what I did notice is that he's also woefully underpaid. Lukaku, Lewandowski, Haaland, Mbappe, all these people make a lot. Benzema, all these people make a lot more money than he does.
Yeah.
I wonder if this doesn't end with a I'm not saying he's doing it for money, but with a contract extension, maybe even some kind of release clause to be activated in the future. Sticking with Spurs, The Athletic reports that they spoke to Hansi Flick, who turned them down. Oh, there's a surprise.
Yeah.
And now their three-man shortlist is Erik ten Hag, Ralf Rangnick, and Roberto Martinez. Do any of these names excite you?
Yeah, I liked Erik ten Hag, as you know. He's just signed a new deal for Ajax, so which would mean that Spurs will have to pay.
Yeah, funny that.
Yeah, Ajax, I'm not sure they're ready to do that. Ralf Rangnick, great. You and I love him. He's such an incredible mind, football mind, really. But you need to give him the whole keys. The keys of the stadium, the training ground, the youth teams, the reserve.
Exactly.
Are they ready to do that? I'm not so sure. We still need some time to do what he wants and money to invest in the players that he wants to. So then you've got Roberto Martinez, who you and I both love, who is with Belgium right now.
And won't be ready until the middle of July.
Exactly.
After Belgium win the Euros.
We've seen before with managers who were with the national team before and then joined a club that it's not always the best of ideas to prepare for next season. So, I'm sorry, they're in a bit of a mess. Gab, we have a big Leo Messi execution on our website as he could be playing his final game for Barcelona at the weekend. I mean, you and I don't think he will leave, but certainly how important would it be for Barcelona to sort this one quickly?
I think it would be hugely important, because obviously if he does leave, then all of a sudden you know how much money you're saving and you know what position you're in. And if he stays, he has to extend his contract, so you clearly have a much clearer financial situation at the club. And as you know, the club's financial situation isn't good. Look, I think Messi should do what Messi wants to do. I think in the interest of the club, I hope whatever it is gets sorted out very quickly. And I'm not saying he owes it to them necessarily,
but I agree with you.
It would be
it would be
a good gesture.
Yeah.
Manchester United draw 1-1 with Fulham, but that's overshadowed by Edinson Cavani's wonder goal, which, as we now know, probably shouldn't have counted since Bruno Fernandes didn't touch the ball.
I don't care. I just want to talk about the goal. Maybe you're right, maybe you're not right. This is an incredible finish from a player that's had such a great impact, and I'm so happy for him. As you know, obviously, I love him from where he's coming from. But great finish. Chipping the goalkeeper from where he was is just incredible.
Not quite David Beckham against Wimbledon, but still
brilliant. Amad Diallo and Paul Pogba, after the same game, displayed the Palestinian flag, Gab, that drew a response from PSV Eindhoven, Aaron Zahavi.
Yeah, it was a response via social media. Look, it used to be that you know, we never saw any kind of displays like this. This is linked, obviously, to events in the Gaza Strip and in Israel. But I think what we're seeing now is footballers and athletes in general feel much more empowered about speaking up on these kinds of issues.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Nicolas Pepe scores twice as Arsenal win 3-1 away to Crystal Palace. Jules, will we remember this as the game where he regained his mojo and went back to being an 80 million euro player?
He's been good this second half of the season, Gab. His second season is always better than the first ones. I think he needs a bit of time to adapt. It was the same at Angers, it was the same at Lille. And I'm glad because he's so talented. He's got really so much talent. And I'm glad when I see him play like he did against Crystal Palace, for example.
Yeah, it's a good thing Arsenal don't have a lot of wingers and big contracts. Willian and Saka and Smith Rowe.
But you can play Smith Rowe and Saka. Willian is going to go.
Oh, is he? Yeah, I'm sure he's going to go.
He will go. Trust me. This was also Roy Hodgson's final home game as Palace manager. Gabby started management back in 1976 and he turned 74 in August. Help me celebrate the man.
He's had an incredibly long career. I've had the privilege of spending time, of having meals with him. He's a really interesting person to talk to. I don't think he'd mind me saying this. I'm not a big fan of his brand of football.
Me neither.
Like, when you're around for 45 years, you're going to make some colossal mistakes in time, one of them being, obviously, his attitude towards Roberto Carlos, which is one of my personal favorites. But I was really happy for him, especially when he came England manager, because I remember, you know, this is a guy, for those young uns out there who don't know, he is English. He started off in Scandinavia. He won titles in Scandinavia. He went to Switzerland. He ended up as Inter manager on two different stints. Yeah. He won the UEFA Cup as Inter manager. When he came back to England, they treated him like they treat a no-name foreign coach, which is, who are you? And he had a really, really difficult time. He wasn't taken seriously. Mm. And he rebuilt that at a great run at Fulham. Became England manager, or I don't know, might be getting the sequence wrong, but it doesn't really matter.
Liverpool as well.
He was at Liverpool, didn't have a good time there, became England manager almost through inertia.
Yeah.
And again, had a lot of lows, the loss to Iceland.
Yeah.
But it's still, I think, an underdog story given where he started.
Definitely.
So, you know, definitely salute
well
to Roy there. Manchester City go down to 10 men, squander a two-goal lead, and lose to Brighton 3-2. Also, as we record this, Ruben Dias, voted Football Writers Player of the Year. I think we're all in agreement with this, yes?
Yeah, completely, yeah. Well deserved.
By the way, first defender to be voted Player of the Year since?
Stevie Nicol, our own Stevie Nicol.
Since our very own Stevie Nicol. Yeah. Shout out to Stevie. But I need to ask you, what happened at the end between Graham Potter and...
So you know the bromance between Pep and Graham Potter. Pep always says, "Oh, Graham Potter is a genius. He's the best
English manager."
But not so much when he celebrates too wildly a goal. Like Pep didn't like his celebrations, so he went from being a genius and the best ever to "I don't like him anymore," which is what.
But can we give a shout out though to Graham Potter, because afterwards
wonderful work.
He apologized to Pep. He says, "I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have behaved that way on the touchline."
But emotions get to you sometimes. We've seen Pep and others.
But how many people have we seen throw tantrums on touchlines? You know, I'm thinking from Antonio Conte to Sean Dyche to Arsene Wenger,
Mourinho.
We don't need to bring up Mourinho as far as Mourinho. Graham Potter is literally and figuratively the bigger man because he goes out and he apologizes. Yeah, he did wrong, he apologized. So well done, Graham Potter. Yeah.
Speaking of City, Sheikh Mansour will pay for fans to travel to Portugal for the Champions League final at the end of the month. It's a really nice gesture, Gab.
It's a nice gesture. I don't necessarily, obviously, this is the equivalent of, you know, you or I chucking a few cents out the window. But what was interesting, it is a nice gesture. I just wonder about the coordination, because I saw the announcement on Manchester City's Twitter. And a lot of the responses were from City fans saying, "Hey, I wish you told me before I come on and booked my flights."
Now, of course, everybody would have already their plane tickets.
I think this is a great gesture for him. I think they kind of missed the trick. I mean, the minute the final was moved to Portugal,
exactly,
you can go out and announce it. It's not that many people. You can afford it. You know, I just PR-wise, I think it would have been better for him, but still a nice gesture.
I agree.
Everton beat Wolves 1-0 thanks to a Richarlison goal. Jules, our boy Carletto, can still dream of the Europa League.
He can. He can. And that would be great for him and part of the progress and all of that. I just wish they were a bit more... I don't know. I'm still disappointed at times when I see them play. And maybe the most important right now is to try to get those European League, the Europa League places. And then we can think about the style of play, the reinforcement, the squad going forward and all of that. But there's something missing there.
I did too many home defeats and they screwed up against Sheffield United.
Sami Khedira announced his retirement from football at 34. Gab, your thoughts?
I feel kind of bad for him. I mean, to me, he was kind of the first sort of super high-priced free agent that's not really free at Juventus. And he had a couple really good seasons. Then he got slowed by injury. He tried to come back with Hertha Berlin this year. He basically didn't play in 18 months. Also suffered some really bad injuries while he was at Real Madrid. Mm. He was a phenomenal player, and I kind of feel he's kind of been forgotten because, you know, he did very little these last 4 or 5 years, again, because of injuries. So it's always sad when this happens in those circumstances.
Yeah.
Olivier Giroud is a free agent at the end of the season. Jules, where do you think he's going?
It's a good point, Gab. I think Italy. Ooh. Like him a lot. We knew about Inter because you almost joined them in January this year. Last year. And now it looks like Milan, who... as we saw, went to get Mandzukic, for example, just as a backup striker, different profile. For 6 months, yeah. But maybe you can give a year contract to Giroud.
Would Giroud go for a year?
1+1. He might go for 1+1. He's 34 years old. I don't know. I think he will have some options. Not just in Italy. I think in other clubs. And he will have to decide, I think even back home in France, in MLS too, he will have to decide where he feels the best. If he wants to go to the next World Cup, though, he will have to find a club where he's competitive and he plays.
Definitely not staying at Chelsea.
I don't think so.
And because we think Cousin Tammy's on the naughty slip.
Maybe.
That would be a hint that Chelsea will sign another striker.
Not to play that little, though.
No, of course not.
You know. UEFA have released their benchmarking report confirming that the European game has lost more than 8 billion euros over the past 2 seasons due to COVID, Gab. How serious it is. I mean, the number speaks to itself, really.
Yeah, let me just put this in context. Because we hear these numbers, 8 billion. Yeah, nobody knows what it means. Essentially, they're back to the level that they were at in 2019. Roughly.
Yeah, it's not just pure losses. It's what they could have earned.
It's losses,
as well,
it's missed revenues.
Yeah, exactly.
They were coming from a decade of growth. They point out that, and I keep going back to this because it's true, that financial fair play, one of the effects is European football as a whole made profits in the last 2 years before COVID hit. So this is obviously a massive blow. They need to take this into account. But equally, I think we can bounce back pretty quickly.
Hmm.
Horrible story from Glasgow, where the home of Celtic chief executive was firebombed. Actually, I think it was the car was firebombed.
Yeah.
This is Peter Lowell, the Celtic chief executive. The car was firebombed and the fire spread to the house. His daughter and young granddaughter were in the house as well. Nobody got hurt, but this is madness.
Scary scene, really. And when you see what's left of the house, and you can just imagine how much the firebomb to start with, and then getting into the house, what it could have been, and it could have been far, far more serious and sad that some people could have been hurt. Actually, I think lucky not to be hurt.
Our thoughts are with him and his family.
FIFA have issued their global development report, and head of development Arsene Wenger talked about the importance of helping the game around the world, floating the possibility of a World Cup every 2 years for the men and the women. Gab, what do you make of it?
So I think for the women, I think it makes sense. Women's World Cups are profitable. The club game doesn't generate anywhere near as much money yet. And I think it's important to go and grow the game. Men's World Cup every 2 years, you're going to run into the issue of saying, well, no, the clubs, these are our players, because essentially there would be an international competition, you know, effectively every year once you factor in, because then we have the Club World Cup, we have the Euros. It would become messy. But he does make a good point. We always view this from kind of a first world big club perspective. Yeah. And he made the point that, you know, there's 211 FIFA member nations and 133 of them have never qualified for a World Cup, not even once. And he talked also about the development. A young player in Europe, you know, at an academy will generally play something like we'll have generally about 200 training sessions a year. A young player throughout most of Africa, of the ones who then become professional later, won't have that grounding, won't have that development. So how do we address that? How do we make the game more accessible? I'm glad somebody's talking about it. We're not just talking about super clubs.
Thing. Yeah.
Can we show more love for my boys, Davy Moyes and avenging Angelo Ogbonna? They came from behind to beat West Brom, and they can still get in the Europa League.
Which would be a great achievement. Of course, they dreamt of the Champions League at some point, and they were, you know, really close to it, even in the top four. But Europa League would already be great, considering they were fighting against relegation at this time last year. So well done to Moyes. To Angelo, of course.
Just call him Angelo in the morning. Just touch his cheek before you leave him.
I haven't been that great in the last few games.
Angelo's been great.
And even that game against West Brom, but they won, and they're still very much in it with the last game of the season. Inter have secured €275 million in financing from the hedge fund Oaktree Capital Gap. Does that improve the chances of Antonio Conte staying at the club?
Yeah, and it improves the chances of the repo man not coming in and carting Lautaro Martinez away and everything that's not nailed down. We should mention here that this is basically, this is essentially a loan, but it's secured on the equity of the club. So that if there's cash flow issues, Oaktree would take over some of that stake. I think it's about 31% of the club. It values the club at, you know, close to €1 billion, which I think they'd be happy with. But there's still a big hole they have to get out there. And the difficulty, again, is to do not just COVID, it's to do with China, Chinese government. But while we're on this subject, of course, some people didn't like Inter's away jersey because they say it looked like a tablecloth.
Which
this
it
year.
Does, to be fair.
As you know, I'm not into discussing, this is my favorite jersey. But other people are, and there's a great piece up on our website from Andrew Richardson discussing the best and the worst Serie A jerseys. Our producer Freddie was very disappointed that the Battistuta Fiorentina one, that the Nintendo on it, wasn't there. Yeah. But hey, can't have everything. River Plate, this is a wild story from South America. They had to play in the Copa Libertadores last night. They've had an absolute cluster of COVID cases.
It's probably more than, 25 players.
I think at one point they had 11 fit players, counting youth players. No goalkeeper.
Yeah.
They basically had, they weren't allowed to register other ones because of some bureaucratic issue, and I think also because they turned down vaccines earlier. Long and short of it is they had an open casting call. It's like, hey, guys, who wants to go and call? And Enzo Perez, former Benfica midfielder, saying, hey, I'll do it.
Yeah, he did, and with a hamstring injury as well. So you can just imagine. And you know what?
They won the game. Very far.
They won the game against Santa Fe in the Copa Libertadores. Just an incredible story. We've seen in South America before teams playing with 8 players, 9 players, because everybody was out for COVID or injury. They just had 11, and that's it. No subs. That's why Perez had to play, being injured himself, in goal. And well done to them. You know, I guess this is the world that we live in right now. It's unfortunate for River, but they won. I'm not sure what it says about Santa Fe, though, not being able to beat that
with Enzo Perez in goal.
Exactly.
With an injured Enzo Perez in goal.
Lazio and Torino drew 0-0 on Tuesday in Serie A, which means that Torino will stay up. But Gab, why was there nearly a brawl involving players and club officials towards the end?
Because some people are really childish. Torino, and this bugs me to even say it, but the Torino president, Urbano Cairo, had words to say because he thought Lazio were trying too hard in this game. Torino needed a point to stay up.
Yeah.
This is important. They needed a point to stay up, but on the last day of the season, Torino are playing Benevento, who were 3 points behind them. So had Torino lost this game and then lost to Benevento, then Torino would be going down.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, the Benevento manager is Pippo Inzaghi, who happens to be the brother of the Lazio manager, Simone Inzaghi. He got into it with Ciro Immobile, who, of course, is a former Torino player.
Yeah, of course.
For the fact that Immobile, he says, tried to win a penalty by diving. I don't want to see any of this. And I think, look, often we say, there's right and wrong. No. Urbano Cairo is wrong. Torino is wrong. You should go into every game with the expectation that your opposition will try to beat you, regardless of whether the coach is doing a favor for his brother, regardless of whether Ciro Immobile doesn't like you, whatever it is, right? You should go out there, and you should never complain that the opposition plays too hard, I think.
Agree with you.
The only exception being, and I'm in the minority here, is when you have those weird situations where, you're 5-0 up, the opposition's down to 9 men, and you're just running up the score just for fun.
Yeah.
I think in some cases that's really disrespectful. This is not one of them. No. Jules, it's time for us to celebrate. The MLS team in Columbus has decided not to rebrand themselves as Columbus SC. but instead will remain the Columbus Crew. It's fan power at work. Yeah. I like to think we have something to do with it, and I'm so grateful to the owners and the Haslam family for issuing that statement where they thanked the Gab and Jewel show. No, just kidding, didn't do that. But still, this is nice, right?
It is nice, and it was the right thing to do. We all here for, you know, modernization and going forward, looking forward and everything, but not when it's a bit silly like that. Columbus Crew is perfect. Good luck to them this season in MLS, and we're very happy that they kept the old name and not went for Ska.
Shout out to the fan group as well. Saved the crew and stuff.
Yeah.
They worked hard to make sure that
they
kept their team in their city when that evil Mr. Precourt or whatever stupid name was tried to take him to Austin. So well done.
Well done, guys. Luke Shaw took to Twitter to say that he would help defend the United supporter who threw a green and gold scarf at his feet during the game on Tuesday night. Gab, he faces a 3-year ban.
Yeah.
Not Luke Shaw, that is. The fan, yeah.
The fan, yeah. I mean, look, obviously, the green and gold scarves, for those who don't know, obviously, it's part of the anti-Glazer protest.
Yeah.
Whoever threw it onto the pitch, I think he was about to take a corner kick, if I recall correctly. Now, that's shades of David Beckham coming back for AC Milan when they threw the scarf at him and he picked it up and put it around his neck. Obviously, this is what this guy was trying to do. We don't condone throwing objects on the pitch. Equally, I think I'm safe granted to say that, like, a wool scarf isn't necessarily going to do the same damage as a bottle or a knife. But good for Luke Shaw. I think it's the right spirit. Hopefully United won't prosecute this guy. Again, we're not condoning throwing things on the pitch, but this is a slightly different circumstance, perhaps. Right, that brings us to an end.
Already.
All right, time flies when you're having a good time. But guess what? We're going to be back on Monday because we will have new champions in Ligue 1.
Yeah.
New champion. Well, no.
You're not sure.
What?
Oh, we might not.
Could
we
be the old champions again.
Exactly.
Yes. And could be old or new champion in La Liga as well. But it's going down to the wire. It's going to be exciting. Champions League races as well. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.